Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Well, for the third consecutive PGA Championship, Valhalla Golf Club produced yet another instant classic. Xander Schauffele, tortured and tormented with the lead for the better part of the past 2 years, birdied the 72nd hole to polish off a Sunday 65 and win the PGA Championship by a single shot over Bryson DeChambeau at 21 under par. Xander Schauffele was the lowest or the most scoring record under par and his first major championship. Rex, are you still buzzing from what was an incredible Sunday here in Louisville?
I really am, because you look at the names that were associated in and around the leaderboard. If you start going down player by player, you had Xander, who had an unbelievable performance on Sunday after last week's performance at the Wells Fargo. You had Bryson DeChambeau, who's going to be my column tonight. Victor Hovland, you had Colin Morikawa. You had so many of the big names right in the mix. And I think you and I talked about this last night. It seemed inevitable that this was going to come down to a playoff. It seemed like there's too many players too close to the lead. There's too many players playing well. This golf course was giving up too many birdies. Like, everything seemed to be heading in that direction. And Xander Schauffele saved us from that with a putt that lipped around and felt, did you have that feeling of like a Wyndham Clark moment just for a second on the 72nd hole when that putt just wrapped around the lip?
Yeah, I absolutely thought this was going to a playoff. I headed out on the golf course when Xander Schauffele was approaching his second shot on 12. And I had a feeling that 20 under par was probably going to be the number. Then Xander had already bogeyed the par 5 10th. Then he did not take advantage of the short 13th, which it seemed like all the contenders were doing. He missed a makeable putt on 12. He got a little bit too conservative on 15. And at that point, you know, you're hearing the roars ahead of you, whether it was Bryson stuffing it on 16, whether it was Bryson making birdie on 18. You just knew it was going to come down to a shot for Xander Schauffele, that he was going to have to step up and do something that he had not done previously in major championships or even high-profile PGA Tour events. That was rise to the moment. That was be clutch. He is excellent in every statistical category. He's an unbelievable driver, unbelievable iron player, unbelievable on and on around the greens. But there is no metric, Rex, for heart, for grit, for timeliness, for clutchness. And I think this was for the first time in Xander's career when he was in this position, when it was his golf tournament to win, that was when he actually seized the moment. And so for me, it was a very satisfying ending to this PGA Championship. The fact that Xander went out and got it, and Bryson DeChambeau did what Bryson DeChambeau does, which is be the ultimate showman and dazzle us with his shot-making ability.
Well, and I want to get into the Bryson DeChambeau element of this, but to the point, we had this conversation just last Sunday. It was 7 days ago that you and I were talking about Xander Schauffele coming up short after having a phenomenal week. And I think both of us had the same take, that I'm not quite sure anyone could have beat Rory McIlroy last week at Quail Hollow the way he was hitting the ball. However, there were some mistakes coming down the stretch. He made a couple of bogeys on the back nine at Quail Hollow. It seemed like whatever that missing gear was, and I think you and I both regurgitated a lot of stats about the idea that he has a historically low scoring average in the first round of a major championship, and then it predictably has dropped off, that it climbs dramatically, almost two full shots for the second round, and then on till it gets till Sunday. That's not a very good way to measure it. Because, again, what we're talking about here is heart. We're talking about guts. We're talking about someone who gets in the heat of the moment and enjoys it, as opposed to someone who gets in the heat of the moment and wants to shrink from that moment. However, it was the only way we can come up with it. And what you saw today was a guy who was clearly well aware of what was going on all around him. He knew that Bryson DeChambeau was making a run at him. He knew that he could not let up, that making a bunch of pars coming down the stretch was not going to get it done. And the fact, I was fascinated by this. You were in the interview. I was listening to it from the press center. He talked about the idea of not wanting a playoff specifically with Bryson DeChambeau. I'm not quite sure he understood the three-hole aggregate playoff.
Did not. I just talked to Xander as soon as he finished his press conference.
And he said, hey, man.
I said, you know that was three holes, right? 13, yeah. 17, 18. He goes, I said, that's okay, man. You had him. Don't worry. Don't worry about
it. Doesn't matter. But I'm probably with you on this one, where I listened to that. My ears perked up because I'm like, wow, that shows an amazing level of thought given the heat of the moment. Most of the time in the heat of the moment, you're not thinking that far ahead, that I don't want a playoff with this specific player on that specific hole. It's a par five. He talked about Bryson being able to just rope hook it off the bunker, leave himself a 9-iron, maybe an 8-iron. And like, I get it. Like, Xander's a really, really good player, has a lot of confidence, but you have to understand your shortcomings. And your shortcoming is, I don't particularly carry the ball 330 yards on command like Bryson does. So I get the motivation for that. And to be able to understand that and then to execute the shot is the best part.
Yeah, and I think the way that this ended has to give him so much confidence, doesn't it, Rex? Like, I asked Xander, he said he was really proud of how he stepped up in certain moments. And you think of all that had kind of conspired against him on this Sunday and for him still to prevail. Bryson DeChambeau shoots 64 in the final round. That's his best round ever in a major championship. It was going to take a historically low number in relation to par to go on and win this championship. But then the bad fortune on 16, he had mud on his golf ball, couldn't quite attack with an 8-iron like he really wanted to. On 17, he absolutely hammered his drive. I was standing right behind the tee, had a great vantage point on it. He hit exactly where he wanted to, just a little bit lower, catches the lip, falls back into a decent but not great lie and isn't able to attack from there and has to get up and down for par as well. And then on 18, he hit what he thought was a great juiced up drive, and it just settles in a very uncomfortable spot just a few feet away from being perfect. Instead, he has to have the baseball swing on 18. At that point, after those three consecutive holes, those three consecutive bad breaks, he has to be wondering, like, this is just not going to happen, right? Like, things are conspiring against me. Or I need to just head a man up and handle it. The 4-iron that he hit with the ball a foot above his feet was an absolute seed. I was standing 20 feet from him. I mean, just an absolute missile in the perfect spot. Left it squarely up the hill. Like, the way that it all went down, the shots that he hit, the way that he executed, it has to give him so much confidence moving forward, breaking this duck in the manner in which he did so.
I mean, no doubt. And when you look at this, and I think someone else, it wasn't you, but someone else asked him, how tired were you of hearing, oh, are you the best player that's never won a major? And he probably was that category. He probably was the top of that category. He clearly, as you pointed out, there were no holes in his game. This isn't Victor Hovland from 3 years ago when we went, yeah, he's a great ball striker, but his short game is awful. There was nothing in Xander's game that would lead you to believe that, no, he's missing something. And ever since he started working with Chris Como, his swing has only gotten better. He's gotten stronger. He's gotten longer. I think mentally, he's only gotten better. And I think he's always been one of the best mental players in the game. So we could sit here and say it, and we probably have said it before on this podcast, that no, he's going to win a major. It's going to happen. It had to happen. It was funny talking with Bryson tonight when he was kind of waiting for it to play out to see how it was going to work out. He sort of acknowledged that, I mean, the dude's going to win a major. There's too much talent there. There's too much drive there. I also was taken from his press conference by the idea that he was asked about last week and how much scar tissue did that give him? How much motivation did that give him? And it was only motivation. It was only not winning only makes me want to win more. And that's kind of unique, I think, even among that set.
I think he was definitely benefited too by the conditions and the congested leaderboard that he had at this PGA Championship, where he couldn't just sit back and shoot 2 or 3 under par and know that that was going to be good enough to win the title. I've gone through now. This is his 9th opportunity Xander Schauffele has, when he had at least a share of the 54-hole lead. These are the scores, Rex, that he shot on those Sundays: 71, 70, 70, 68, 71, 69, 70, 74. And 74 was the 2018 Open Championship at Carnoustie, the one where Tiger was in the mix as well. He probably knew he had no real opportunity. He wasn't quite ready to win that. In other words, I think the other opportunities that he's had, clearly he's been in better form, more experienced player, higher caliber of a player. When you listen to those scores, none of them particularly jump out. Like, he never collapsed. He never self-immolated. He was, you know, he's never embarrassed. It was just not quite good enough. And knowing on this Sunday that it was going to take something, his goal is to get to 22 under par, and he came up one shot shy, and it was still enough. Knowing that he was going to have to go out and get it, he was going to have to stay aggressive, he was going to have to stay on his front foot, I think really benefited him, as opposed to, I think he's had a tendency in the past, and I think even clearly last week at Quail Hollow, where he gets a little bit too conservative, gets a little bit too timid, and that makes him vulnerable or more susceptible to be lapped by a guy last week at Rory, who went out and got it, or this week Bryson was that guy who was absolutely hunting him down as well.
And the part that, and based on those scores that you just rattle off, and that's good stuff, I think the part that gets me is there's really not a horse for a course on this one. And by that, I mean, and I think we had this conversation earlier in the week, that Brooks Koepka put himself in the hunt, and we were sort of talking around why we think he would be good going into the weekend. And you sort of touched on the obvious, that he doesn't particularly like these types of major championships. He doesn't like where 21 under wins. He wants to have one under win. Like, that's more his speed. He wants par to be a good score because he knows mentally he's stronger than everyone else. Well, I can go out and I can make a par. However, if I got to make 21 birdies to offset that one par, that makes it a little bit more difficult for him. The other side of it is Rory McIlroy, as you've pointed out on numerous occasions, I'm going to let you read the stat because this is your favorite stat. When it comes to major championships, he's never won a major that wasn't a double digit under par. I don't see that shoehorning Xander one way or the other. If one under would have won this week, I still think Xander probably would have been the guy. And simply because he has that complete of a game, that there's nothing about his game that, yeah, he can go out and make 21 birdies, but he's also going to make a whole bunch of pars when guys are struggling.
And it's become a running joke on this podcast, and I understand it. It's been a running joke among the folks who
just one running joke? Well, we have just one?
That I pick Xander Schauffele to win a major, at least one major championship every single year, especially since 2017 U.S. Open, where he burst onto the scene. The reason I did that is because you look at every major championship, and you can't be like, well, he's really well-suited for Augusta National, but he can't win a U.S. Open type test. Or, you know, he can't win a track meet at the PGA, but maybe he can play in the wins of an Open championship. Like, the dude can play and has played well everywhere. His game travels. He can win track meets. He can win shootouts. He can win grind fests. He can win where par is a great score. Like, entering this year, the U.S. Open was his best major, you know, where you've got to figure anywhere between even and seven under par is going to do well. Why is that the case? Well, he's a really good driver of the golf ball. His iron play, and I think we've seen that now, that he's hitting it so much further, he's coming into the greens with less club, has steadily improved as well. And he has hit, to his word, some clunky pitches around the green in some pretty clutch moments. Today, we didn't see that. He was really tidy on and around the greens and made the clutch putts. This is a player who is built to last, especially with his change with Chris Como, and he should remain a factor in the major championships in particular moving forward. I mean, he had six top fives in the majors entering this PGA. There's no reason to think now that the lid's off, that he can't pick off a couple more as well.
Now, you say that, but I'm going to rewind and make you relive the moment on the 10th hole when he makes a bogey on what is, I believe statistically, it was the easiest hole of the week. I'd have to go look that up. And I don't want to quote you because this is a family podcast, and I believe you, there were some things that came out of your mouth that aren't fit for a family podcast, but you weren't quite as confident at that point that you probably are right now.
No, because that was, I think, the mistakes that Xander is prone to making. You think back into the third round on 15, he just seized a two-shot lead. It seems like he's finally in command of his golf tournament, has either a missed club, misjudgment, whatever the case. He airmails it over the green and makes a quick double. On 10, he just made another birdie on 9. He had seemingly seized control of the golf tournament again. He's two shots up. He's heading to a par 5. This is an opportunity for him to put his foot down. What does he do? He gets a little bit too greedy from a fairway bunker, leaves it out right in a dead, in no man's land. It walks off with a bogey on what is the easiest hole at Valhalla. Those are the mistakes that have cost him major championships in the past. The difference this time is that his ball striking is so much better and has improved so steadily under Chris Como in the 5 or 6 months that they've now been working together that he can rely on his mid-iron play. Dropped a great one in there on 11, dropped a great one in there on 12, back-to-back birdies. All of a sudden that has been offset it, and he stayed in front, and that was the difference this time. He still is prone to those uncharacteristic or sloppy mistakes, but he has the firepower to offset them now, especially when it's a test like this, he could still prevail.
I thought it was fascinating when he was talking about the idea of winning this, what it means to him. Obviously, it puts him into a different category. Like, we probably shouldn't, but yes, you win a major championship, that puts you into a different category as a player. However, he still stopped well short of, I'm not Scottie Scheffler. I have a long way to go to get to Scottie Scheffler. I'm still staring up at Scottie Scheffler. And I understand where he's coming from, and I certainly appreciate the thought that, man, I need to keep working to catch up with that guy. But if you look at it, and not being a prisoner of the moment right now, it doesn't seem like they're actually that far off. And take Scottie Scheffler's week out of the mix. Like, this was a crazy week for him, and we'll get into it a little bit more. Like, clearly there was a lot of other things going on besides golf for him. But when you just look at it from a statistical point standpoint, when you look at what he is doing well now, all the things that Xander is able to do now that maybe last year at this time that you didn't feel confident that he could pull off, I feel like he's closer than he probably alluded to in that press conference.
Yeah, there was a great quote. I'm probably going to butcher it, but essentially he said that Scottie Scheffler's at the top of the mountain, and with this major championship victory, Xander has essentially put one hook into the side of the mountain. He's nowhere near Scottie, but he's at least starting the ascent. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He said, and I'm going to enjoy this. Yeah. I'm going to stop for a beer and savor this, but I'm nowhere near reaching the top of the mountain. And look, when you look at statistically, yes, Scottie Scheffler is the best player, and he's the best player by far from a strokes gain standpoint on the PGA Tour. But Xander hits it further. He hits it a little bit straighter. He's a better long iron player. He's certainly better on the greens than Scottie Scheffler, who has made significant strides in 2024, but is still not the putter that Xander Schauffele is. To me, I think he's a more complete version of Rory. Plenty of distance in the tank, especially now with some of the changes he's made. He's 5 years younger than Rory McIlroy. Like, I think he's better positioned to challenge Scottie over the next 2 to 4 years than Rory McIlroy is. Do you agree with that assessment?
Oh, I think so, simply because of where he is right now. And look, we're getting caught up and getting a little breathless in the moment. So I do want to pump the brakes a little bit. This is a very good win, and it's an awesome accomplishment, especially when you consider the names around him. It would be one thing if he was the top name on a leaderboard that otherwise didn't have a lot of firepower, but there was a ton of firepower behind him, including, like, look, it was way too little, way too late. Scottie Scheffler, he played a very good round today. Rory McIlroy played a very good round today. Again, it was way, they didn't have a chance. It was way too little, way too late, but there was plenty of people behind him that would have been there had he done anything to falter. And I'm talking about really falter, not bogey the 10th hole, which sent you apoplectic over the edge. But I think he realized the situation he was in. And certainly when you look at the tools that he has, look at his age, and look at his ability to play not just one style of golf, I think all of those things add up to what could be a fun rivalry.
That's now 18 minutes in which we have given PGA champion Xander Schauffele his flowers. How about your column, Rex?
What are you keeping track? Why are we measuring this?
I think that was proper due for Xander Schauffele as we now turn the page to your column on NBCSports.com/golf on Sunday night, which was about Bryson DeChambeau, the runner-up. He was Big Bad Bryson once again, led the field by far in driving distance, third strokes gained tee to green, started making some putts. The theatrics, whether it was the clutch birdies on the 72nd hole to give himself a chance, but whether it was the chip and eagle on 18 on Saturday to inject himself squarely into the mix. How do you put a bow on Bryson's week, as this is now back-to-back major championships in 2024, in which he has been a significant factor?
I want to footnote this, saying that you and I probably spent too much of this week sitting too close to Eamon Lynch. And so he might have rubbed off on me a little bit here. And I understand, and this is probably going to be the last line of my column, the way it's structured right now. Sunday at the PGA Championship is no time to grandstand for peace and unity within the game of golf. I get that. This was not a Live Golf versus PGA Tour column. However, it is going to come across as that, because when you, my new argument is, I always used to say golf was at its best when Phil Mickelson was at his best. Because look, Tiger was a quantifiable entity. We knew week in and week out he was going to do something special. He was going to do something fun and entertaining. However, when he was pushed, that's when golf was the most enjoyable. And more times than not, he was pushed by Phil Mickelson. So whenever Phil was playing his best golf, and he and Tiger Woods found them in the very, very rare instances when they went head-to-head, that's when I remember golf being the most entertaining over the course of those decades. The new saying, or the new idea now, is golf is at its best when you have both sides of the coin. And by that, and I'm not trying to make Bryson DeChambeau out to be an anti-hero here. Like he's not the bad guy. However, as our friend Doug Ferguson from the AP coined the phrase, the PGA Tour has turned into a Marvel movie without any villains. And by that, I mean that Scottie Scheffler and Xander Schauffele and Victor Hovland and Colin Morikawa, and I keep going down the list, they're all really, really good players. They all play the game really well. They got great smiles, and they all say the absolute perfect thing. Like, they are just, they are cut from the mold of they should be NFL quarterbacks if they were a foot taller and 60 pounds heavier. Like,
they're all like Matt Ryan. They're all like, yes, Matt Ryan, the former NFL quarterback.
Like, NFL quarterbacks are just conditioned not to say anything remotely interesting, because if you say something remotely interesting, there is the chance it's going to get you in trouble. So fast forward now to the idea that, and I love this interview with Bryson tonight. Like, look, he was very excited. He put himself in the mix, but he said all week long he had his B game. And that's not something that Xander is going to say if he's in contention. Like, that's going to ruffle some feathers. That's, some guys are going to look at that and roll their eyes and say Bryson is being Bryson. But when you watched him today in the 16th hole, and you just talked about Xander playing the 16th hole, is the perfect example. He hit it left of left, and Bryson did not drive the ball very well this week. He hit it left from left. It careened off the trees and back into the fairway. He had 218 yards. Would you like to guess what club he hit from 218 yards to 3 feet?
Seven iron.
You can play along.
It was an
8 iron, and he hit it and he started literally dancing up the fairway. Like, again, you cannot like Bryson. I get he's a polarizing figure, and I think that's my point in all of this, is the game is better when there are some sort of polarizing figures. I think Brooks Koepka last year at the PGA Championship was very much a polarizing figure. Like, sometimes he's too cool for people. I think some people even call him chill. I'm not going to say who that is. However, the game needs that. And again, this is not going to be a column about preaching about we need unity in the game, but it's so much better when you have all of the top players together. And that's both sides. That's the Bryson DeChambeaus and the Brooks Koepkas and the Patrick Reeds of the world, as well as the Scottie Schefflers and the Xander Schauffeles.
But I almost like these small doses of Bryson a little bit more. You know, I don't think it's any secret that he was not the most popular player on the PGA Tour. He could grade on some of his peers. He could grade on some of the media members. Some would think that his act would wear a little bit thin. But to get these sort of sporadic injections of, like, full Bryson, and I think Bryson misses this stage as well. And I think, you know, I'm not saying he took it for granted, his time on the PGA Tour and playing on a bigger stage in front of more people with the best players in the world. But I'm saying I think he really appreciates it now, sort of the rarity that it comes, and treating, you know, live events or his YouTube videos as kind of warm-ups and a chance to grow his profile that way. But getting to the major championships is where his legacy is ultimately going to be decided. And to have the attention of the golf world once again, to continue to be the fascination of golf fans once again, I think it's even more special. And I've come to appreciate Bryson's athletic and competitive genius even more, I think, the less I see him and the more he's kind of injected into these proceedings.
I think we did this probably 2.5 years ago now on the pod, where we went down the list. We essentially went down the list of all the players at that point who had joined LIV Golf. And I think you actually had a noise for it. You'd come up with some sort of,
I would look on the leaderboard, and if I was going to miss them, I would go.
Yeah, that's right. I remember there was a sound effect. That's as good. That's high quality production on our end. That's how we did it with a. That's not going to work. Get him out of here. And we went down the list. And I think both of you and I were in agreement 2.5 years ago that we were going to miss Bryson. And not necessarily because, look, he can be difficult to deal with from a media perspective sometimes, because he does get out there and sometimes he takes some heat for some of the things he says. And then he wants to push back against the media for having the audacity to actually write about what he said. However, he was a content fountain, just a gift from the content gods, because every single round he had something to say that you were going to scribble into your notebook, or you and I were going to run to our laptops and we were going to plug in our mics and we were going to sit and talk about it. I miss that on a regular basis. I'm with you. I think what has happened in golf is what we thought was what we predicted was going to happen. And that was going to make the majors more important, because it was going to be the few times, 4 times a year, that they all get back together and we have sort of this circus, this zoo that we can celebrate and we can enjoy. However, man, I miss Bryson. I'm not going to lie. I don't necessarily miss Brooks. I got to be honest with you. He was difficult to talk to today, and I remembered him. Yep, that's why I probably gave him the, I won't miss him. But I think in Bryson's case, it's just, it's chef's kiss perfect when he starts talking about the things that he talked about in the press conference. And And he leaned into what you just mentioned, how he has learned via his experience on YouTube how to be a better entertainer. And look, there aren't a lot of guys out here, and this leads to a conversation that we've had in the past, that understand that not only is this a competition, not only do you have to go out and be really, really good at what you do for a living, but this is also an entertainment product. And part of this has to be performative. And I think Bryson understands that better than most.
And I've always taken exception, Rex, with people who just think, you know, Bryson is just a showman or he's just a clown.
No, that's not
just
fair.
Kind of a just a kind of a caricature. I've covered this kid since junior golf. He has always been an amazing golfer, like truly an amazing golfer, a generational ball striker. The way that he puts his bat on the ball, the way that he has transformed himself, the weight gain, the slimming down, the speed training, the physics, the Epsom, the balls floating in Epsom salt. Like, yes, is it a little bit out there? Do some of his things not work? Yes. Like the diet that he tried to go on where he was slamming five Orgain shakes a day. He ended up he ended up being allergic to that and had to slim down again. But he's not afraid to try things. He's not afraid to put the work into it. And through it all, he has always played exceptional golf. He has played exceptional golf when he was skinny. He's played except when he was, shall we say, beefy. He's played exceptional golf when he was shorter, when he's longer. Like, he's a truly gifted athlete who also has a knack for entertaining and stirring up the masses. I'm with you. I absolutely miss Bryson, and I can't wait to see him again at the U.S. Open.
Did you just fat shame Bryson?
No, I said he was a little bit hefty.
I think beefy. Beefy is the beefy word you use, to be clear. Let's rewind and listen to it. Nope, yep, that's it. Beefy. Fat shaming Bryson. Let's put that in the notes.
What other storylines stood out to you, not just from this Sunday, Rex? I think we have to give Victor Hovland a shout-out, too. I don't think anyone would have expected Victor Hovland to contend for this title. Certainly not when you and I were sitting around waiting for a live from hit on Wednesday night, and he was literally, quite literally, the last golfer on the driving range, maybe even on the property here at Valhalla. He ends up finishing third, had an opportunity to potentially, we may have thought, get to the playoff at minus 20, end up three putting it, but finished alone in solo third. What else was some of your highlights from today and the week?
I was actually sweating that one out because I think I threw that stat out there. I don't believe anyone has ever won a major championship when he closed the range down on Wednesday. It's a very unscientific stat, but I believe it's still.
Jay Ray, help us out. I'm not sure Randy Robles from Elias Sports Bureau who hit us up, let's see, roughly 47 times a day with his emails.
And Randy, lose my email, please, after tonight. No more emails. Lose my email.
Definitely get blocked.
Victor is one of the things I'm going to remember for this week, for all the things you pointed out. Like, look, this at in the fall, when he finished up at East Lake, I didn't think anybody could beat him. He had won back-to-back playoff events. He got the fourth in the world. He looked like he was going to be an unstoppable force into the near future. I pray for his sake that he's done tinkering when it comes to swing coaches, that just go back to TrackMan Maestro, Joe Mayo, and do what you do best, which is ball strike. And don't try to go looking for something better. And I know that's what makes great players great. And I've always been a little defensive of people who criticize great players of looking into different corners and cracks to get a little bit better. However, in this case, I think the sample size, which is 6 months now, proves that, no, like, you're where you need to be. Let's just stay there and let's move on. Colin Morikawa is another one. He has not played his best golf over the last, I don't know, what are you going to call it, 2-3 years? Right now, he just hasn't been himself. He actually went back to his old swing coach as well and had a really good week. I'm sure he's disappointed with the way he finished today. I think he made one bogey and one par. That wasn't going to get it done on this golf course. However, when we look back at the 23-23 PGA, and with all due respect to Xander and Bryson and everything else that happened, there's only going to be one thing that we talk about, and it's going to be Scottie Scheffler. And we had a chance to talk with Scottie briefly after he finished up his round today, and I think he's going to have to take some time to process this still. And we talked about this last night, the fact that he talked to his lawyer before the round yesterday. I think that clearly threw him. I don't think he had a chance to really process what had happened. I don't think it had sunk in, that's his words, not mine, until he talked to his lawyer on Saturday morning. Consequently, not surprisingly, he didn't play very good golf on Saturday. So it was a surreal moment, I think there's going to be a resolution on this sooner rather than later. And we're going to find out that Scotty really didn't do anything wrong, which is what we all believed, what we all thought. But yeah, I don't think I don't think if we look back 10 years from now, we're going to think of anything else besides Scotty getting arrested on Friday morning.
You don't think we're going to think back to Victor Hovland coming out of nowhere to post a solo third finish at the PGA Championship? I do think he deserves a ton of credit here because he has faced nothing but criticism over the past 5 months. So why would you possibly split from your swing coach with which you had the most success, from which you had in which you became a FedEx Cup champion, a Ryder Cup hero, a consistent major championship contender? Victor Hovland has always viewed swing coaches as sort of a transactional relationship. It's not these lifelong friendships and relationships that we've seen have been forged with either, you know, Scottie Scheffler with Randy Smith, maybe Jordan Spieth with Cameron McCormick, Justin Thomas with his dad, whatever the case may be, whatever example you want to use. He's always basically looking for information, and he processes that, and then he uses it however he wants. I think it's clear now that Joe Mayo is a good fit, and the information that he tells him can make him a better golfer. But it would not surprise me at all if Victor Hovland in 3 to 6 months splits with Joe Mayo again and goes into a different direction. Joe Mayo himself, while talking to Kevin Van Valkenburg of Bill Laying Up, said as much, that, hey, his relationships or his personality is not for everybody. He knows that he can grade on people. And that was some of these things sort of run its course. I am excited, though, about the prospect of Victor Hovland for the rest of this major championship season. I think with one more week potentially of seasoning with Joe Mayo, I think this could have been a different PGA Championship. This looked like the player that we saw last year during the FedEx Cup playoffs when Victor Hovland was in full flight. To your point, Rex, about Scottie Scheffler, put your news hat on. What is the resolution that you think we can expect, or what is the latest from the Scottie Scheffler case?
There's an arraignment here in Louisville on Tuesday morning. It's 9 a.m. From what I've been told, that arraignment, well, one of two things is going to happen. Either over the next, let's call it 24 hours, prosecutors will drop the case against them. That's one of the things that I'm being told. It's a slim chance that's going to happen. What seems more likely at this point is they're going to push the arraignment out a week or two. And then at that point, they would probably drop the charges in a week or two before the arraignment happens. And because of that, I just think it's a weak case. From what I'm hearing, it's just not a very strong case. The prosecutor is not going to bring a weak case against the world's best golfer. That's only going to embarrass not just the prosecutor, but the city of Louisville. And the reasoning behind just pushing back the arraignment, and then if you're going to get rid of the case, is because it's just optics at this point. I mean, because you have the world's best golfer who was in jail for about an hour. And then if you just cancel his arraignment less than 24 hours later, it's just not a good message to send to the community. So at this point, it feels more like it's local politics than it is anything else. But I believe what happened here on Friday morning, we may never get the full story, but it seems like it's closer and closer to Scottie Scheffler's version than to what was in the police report.
If the golf glove doesn't fit, you must quit. So anyway, you could wrap up the Scottie Scheffler case for 2024 PGA Championship. As we close the books on this PGA Rex and turn our focus to Pinehurst next month, which player, who obviously did not win here, sans Xander Schauffele, do you think the most pressure is on when we get to Pinehurst? Or should I say, who are you most interested in seeing can rebound from this week and do something at the next major championship?
I'm going to go with the person that we haven't mentioned yet, and it's going to be Rory McIlroy. It's funny, he came into this week and he wasn't the favorite, but he was only slightly second to Scotty, who we all agreed was in a category by himself. He had won last week at Wells Fargo, doing the things that he does best, which is just dominating a golf tournament with his driver. And when Rory is playing his best golf, that's the way he does it. He came back to a golf course where he won his last major back in 2014. Like, all of the stars felt like they were aligned, and then it seemed like the bottom fell out on Monday when the story broke that he had filed for divorce along with his wife Erica in South Florida. Clearly was distracting, and that's perfectly understandable. Clearly didn't have his best golf this week. However, and the few things he said before he left, I think there's a level of confidence going into Pinehurst, and you can't divorce yourself from the obvious. It's still been a decade. He's still scrambling. Like, it's been a long time, and no one knows that better than Rory.
Having played Pinehurst recently, humble brag, it's hard to see that one can come to fruition for Rory McIlroy. If it don't get rain and that golf course plays how it should – which is firm, bouncy, very tight around the greens, having to be so precise with your short irons and wedges into very, very small plateaus on those dome-shaped greens. Like, I don't see that one happening for Rory McIlroy. To me, the player to watch is John Rahm. A missed cut here at the PGA Championship on a golf course that should have been tailor-made for his skill set, certainly would have been a year ago. He can talk himself into this one all he wants. He can mention his top tens that he's had in every single live event, but the facts are the facts. In the tournaments that matter most, that he is preparing for the most, that he's gearing up for the most, he has completely fallen flat. Whether it was finishing out to the top 40 at the Masters in a subtle defense there, or a miscut at Valhalla, which was very surprising. John Rahm is not at his best right now, and we don't have an answer as to why. Is it because of the live schedule has not properly prepared him? Is it because he's taken his eye off the ball with all the guaranteed money? We don't know. We're no closer to any sort of answer, but I do think the longer this goes on, whether it's not winning on live, whether it's continuing to disappoint in the major championships, the more I think it will become a talking point, and it's a talking point that he's not going to be particularly fond of.
Didn't we agree that we weren't going to have this conversation until the Monday after the Open Championship? That we weren't going to cast a final ballot on whatever
the outcome is going to be? I'm not casting any final ballot. I'm saying my eye is trained on John Rahm.
Just one eye or both eyes? Just one eye.
My non-colorblind eye. I'm going to train on John Rahm.
Aren't they both colorblind?
But I do think John Rahm, given his history in the U.S. Open, that should be a sort of test that he's built for. And if he doesn't perform again, I mean, boy, the heat's only going to get turned up.
I mean, you dismiss Rory's chances on the golf course that you just played a few weeks ago for all the obvious reasons that this is going to be a very, very unique and difficult test by any measure. It doesn't seem like John Rahm is particularly close to being sharp enough to be able to compete on
according to John Rahm, he is. According to John Rahm, he's got his A minus or B plus game.
I mean, Bryson DeChambeau said he had his B game. So we see what that means. I don't know. Again, you might be right. And I'm as interested as anyone to see how John Rahm finishes out the major championship season. Because again, on Monday or on our podcast Sunday night from Royal Troon, this will be a topic. We'll talk about the winner. We'll talk about the runner-up. We'll talk about the happenings of the week. And we will talk about John Rahm's major championship season for all the reasons that you just pointed out. Because we knew that him making that jump to live golf was going to put him in danger of not having that edge. Like he needs to, he lives his life on an edge, and he can say whatever he wants. And he can say that, no, I know exactly what I'm doing. I can figure this out. But we haven't seen that up to this point. I still want to give that two more majors.
Absolutely. I think that's only fair, but it will be a talking point as we head into the U.S. Open. It is 9 p.m. Eastern time here at Valhalla. You have a Bryson column to finish. I have not yet started a Xander Schauffele game story. It's certainly going to be a long night with a 6 a.m. flight looming on Monday. So end this podcast, end the week with something very poignant, Rex.
I'm going to end the week with the idea, and it was not the week we expected it was going to be. There was a divorce. There was a very, very tragic death, and there was a detention. And never before, and I don't know how to quantify this. Like I was thinking about this as I was walking around the golf course earlier today, and I've done some weird stuff in my career and been involved in some surreal moments. Not sure that anything can really compare to this, only because they were things so outside of the realm of what we consider a normal week. Like had there been some sort of crazy rules infraction, had there been some sort of crazy moment where I'm just going to throw this out there, where Xander Schauffele waded into a creek and bounced a couple balls off on his way to losing Vandeveld style. Like that's one thing. You and I are conditioned to understand and wrap our minds and put those things into context. I the column I actually thought about writing tonight was to try to put this entire week into context. And I think it would be so difficult because everything that happened that, and again, I go back to the idea, what are we going to remember 10 years from now? Really didn't happen on the golf course. No disrespect to Xander. Like him getting the victory is really cool. And I think we all agree that this is what golf needs right now. Certainly I'm writing that golf needs Bryson DeChambeau to do what he did today, but everything else that involved this week, it was strange to the extreme.
So that's a column angle that you scrapped.
It is. Should I circle back around?
Yeah, so you're not going to do that one. I was thinking, I mean, Friday was among the most, one of the craziest, most confusing, messiest days that I've covered as a golf writer. I think back to the day in 2021 when Tiger drove off the cliff, and there was at least a couple hours where you wondered if this was life-threatening or if he was going to make it. I was at concession. Like, that was a very strange, surreal day to be there, where his PGA Tour peers, many of whom had idolized him, were wondering whether their idol was going to make it. That was very strange. Even last year's Ryder Cup was pretty crazy, with Rory getting in a fight with Bones in the parking lot. The 2012 Ryder Cup, where Rory needed a police escort with Erica to get to the golf course in time to make his tee time. Like, there has been strange, surreal days. That was certainly up there. But had it not happened, had we not had that sort of drama to occur during the PGA Championship, I mean, it would have been a very satisfying end to the PGA. But I think it just made that week that much more memorable. That's certainly what I'm going to remember from the 2024 PGA Championship as well. All right, we have some columns to write on this here Sunday night, but we do, as always, thank you guys for listening, not just to this podcast, but each and every mini pod that we did through the tournament week. We'll, of course, do that through the U.S. Open. We will proudly be unveiling a title sponsor for those mini pods.
Good tease.
Pinehurst. Good it tease. Is going to be a delicious, pun intended. You guys are the drill. MCSports.com/golf for our latest news, notes, and updates. Rex's column on Bryson, mine on Xander. We'll be back with our regularly scheduled program on Wednesday as we preview what should be Scottie Scheffler's expected start at Colonial. Thanks as always for listening. Thanks for the support. Talk to you guys in a couple of weeks.